Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
This episode is also brought to you by Canby Signs and Graphics, creative geniuses, state-of-the-art technology. If you need something printed on anything, visit them today at canbygraphics.com.
This tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Is that the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again?
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place. Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
I'm James Walton.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
A Canby City Council meeting with a shorter than usual list of business to attend to last week saw a lengthy but seemingly productive discussion about the appointment of a new member to the Planning Commission. Such appointments are typically included in the so-called consent agenda, a laundry list of routine items such as meeting minutes and liquor license applications that are bundled up and handled in a single vote. But the application of Jason Taylor caught the eye of more than one councillor because of its apparent political nature. The Planning Commission, like all elected and appointed positions in city government, is a nonpartisan role, but much of Taylor's application seemed to have a decidedly political bent. Under the first question on the application, which asked about community interests, Taylor said he is a part of an organization called the United Liberty Coalition, and that he has been a part of political rallies and meetings with legislators, quote, on bills that are either taking our liberties away or mandating our liberties out of existence, end quote. I have more recently gotten politically involved as a result of tiresome government overreach, Taylor said. Though I'd rather spend my time filling the roles of father, friend, and business owner, I've realized that there's a need for people without agendas to be tangibly involved in the processes of local government as well. This seeming reluctance to do the job he was applying for bothered Councillor Sarah Spoon, as did his later promise to help, quote, ensure that city guidelines are developed, followed, and enforced based on the will of the people.
I think every single one of us, particularly when it comes to land use, has made a vote at one point in time that maybe wasn't our personal preference or maybe wasn't the will of the people, but the role calls for following the law and whether or not the application fits the law. And I'm concerned that there was, you know, about two-thirds of his application was about ideology and the other third was about following the will of the people. And I didn't feel like there was anything in the application that seemed like he had the objective or was willing or interested in fulfilling the actual role of Planning Commission.
A robust discussion followed, and every other councillor, along with Mayor Brian Hodson, had a chance to speak. Mayor Hodson, who was part of the interview committee that had recommended Taylor over a second applicant, explained that he had similar concerns when he read the application, but that the committee had impressed upon Taylor about the appropriate role of the Planning Commission, which is one of regulation and oversight, not advocacy of one's personal or political beliefs. He said that what made Taylor ultimately stand out from the other candidate was that he had recently attended a number of Planning Commission meetings and was familiarizing himself with how that body worked. Councillor Trigg Berge, a vice president of a commercial contracting firm who's no stranger to job resumes and applications, said he found such documents tend to be, quote, just as good as the paper it's written on.
I see a lot of resumes that are fabricated and don't actually give somebody justification. I also see an application like this where somebody has a lot of time and they try and make it sound good and they kind of go overboard on certain issues and stuff like that. To me, it's when you sit down with them and you hear them and you talk to them and you hear what they have to say, mm-hmm. That's when the rubber meets the road, so to speak. Sure.
Councillors suggested a number of ways that the process for local boards and committees could be improved in the future, including custom applications that ask more meaningful questions about the role of each one, rather than a one-size-fits-all form the city uses now. In the end, Taylor was appointed to a term ending in December 2021 by a 4-2 vote, with Councillors Spoon and Greg Parker voting against. In an unexpected coincidence, it all seems to have worked out in the end. The second applicant, Mike Hutchinson, was the only one to apply for yet another seat on the Planning Commission, which is being vacated at the end of the year by a current member who doesn't want to be reappointed. Hutchinson is a facility maintenance technician for the City of Portland who has spent over 20 years providing technical support to high school and community theater productions at the Canby Fine Arts Center. He's scheduled to be appointed on December 18th. The city of Canby has seen a rise in nighttime vehicle break-ins this month, and local police are warning residents to be vigilant. A December 5th post on the Canby Police Department's Facebook page by Officer Catherine Mitchell informed readers about the spike in criminal activity and urged them to remember to lock up and do not leave valuables inside vehicles. The break-ins and attempted break-ins, which have been reported throughout the city and do not seem to be concentrated in any particular area, have been the subject of much discussion in the community and on Facebook groups like Canby Now, with some suggesting that perhaps armed or unarmed neighborhood watch groups are the answer. Canby Police Chief Brett Smith said that there has been an increase in break-ins, and it is certainly something residents should be aware of and take appropriate precautions against. However, he said that such a spike is not unusual during the winter holiday season, when nights are longer, finances get pinched, and drug use may be more prevalent. For residents concerned about safety, Chief Smith pointed out that the city has seen no rise in violent crimes or other threatening activities. "These are crimes of opportunity," Chief Smith said. "Largely, we're seeing folks just being careless, leaving their cars unlocked or stuff in plain sight, and this is a time of year when you do see a rise in this type of illegal activity." He says he had heard similar things in other jurisdictions. "The holiday season is a target of opportunistic thieves," Chief Smith said, "because the stress and the busyness can lead folks to become more careless. Gifts may be left in cars either by accident or as a hiding place. Canby may also be a target because its longtime reputation as one of the safest cities in the state may have lulled some residents into a false sense of security. Increased car prowls, petty theft, and property crime can also be linked to drug use and a rise in the transient population, which the chief said has been observed in other cities but has not been noticed in Canby. Canby police are investigating the break-ins that have occurred while also stepping up nighttime enforcement patrols to help deter future incidents or apprehend those responsible. What was once a very neglected tree nursery on Highway 211 south of Canby is under new ownership and could see a vibrant new life as wedding and event venue if the county agrees to grant their conditional use permit after a hearing next month. Lavender Owl Farm is a 21-acre property zoned for exclusive farm use. The term is a bit of a misnomer. Oregon codes allow for a number of non-farm uses on properties zoned for exclusive farm use, including churches, personal airfields, and yes, venues for certain kinds of events. Owners Robert and Leslie Wise seem particularly keen to set Lavender Owl up as a premier wedding venue. In their planning application, they explained how they have worked hard to revive the neglected nursery stock and clean up the property of overgrown brush, blackberry brambles, revealing natural garden spaces and intimate wooded areas perfect for weddings, parties, and group gatherings. They requested permission to hold up to 6 events a year to start with the possibility of later expanding to 16. The maximum attendance at each event would be 175 guests, with the majority being in the 50 to 100 range. The farm would be open for events from mid-May through early September because it's primarily an outdoor venue, though there is an existing 2,400 square foot barn the owners would like to use as an additional event space. That will be up to the county. They have parking for up to 100 vehicles, including some handicap spaces, and their entrance from Highway 211 has been approved for events by ODOT. The Wises believe that Lavender Owl Farm would have a beneficial impact on the local economy. Quote, "Weddings and social events bring people from many different towns, states, and countries, and they stay in hotels, eat in restaurants, and visit local places," they said. "They spend money here, and we all benefit." The hearing is scheduled for January 9th at 9:30 a.m. Canby is finally getting its first traffic signal. Yep, you heard that right. Though there are a number of stoplights in the city, they are all operated by the state, Oregon Department of Transportation, or Clackamas County. The latest, which is planned for the intersection of Sequoia and Hazeldale at the entrance to the Fred Meyer complex, is the first that will be built, operated, and maintained by the City of Canby. The project took a big step forward last week as the Canby City Council, in their role as the Urban Renewal Agency, approved a $640,000 contract with Brown Contracting out of Eugene to construct the new signal. Curran McLeod, a Portland-based engineering firm, was previously contracted to design the project. Brown's was the lowest bid out of the four that the city received and also represents a slight savings from the $700,000 that had been initially anticipated. The project is being funded primarily with urban renewal dollars. As City Administrator Scott McClure explained last week, the project would also have qualified system development funds, which are fees paid by developers to support city infrastructure, but the decision was made to reserve those for future projects, like the extension of Walnut Street, which will serve as the new north access point for the Canby Industrial Park.
We do have some money that was set aside from a couple development projects in the amount of about $57,000 that will be applied toward this, so that'll basically buy down what the Urban Renewal Agency's commitment is on the project. And then a note also came up too, this is a project that could have been SDC eligible or urban renewal. A lot of times you just pick and choose where to go. In this case, there's some big construction projects coming, and so it was decided to allocate this to URA, free up the SDCs for bigger projects like the Walnut Street extension.
Most of the planned Walnut Street extension lies outside the City of Canby urban renewal area and so is ineligible for any of those funds. City officials expect construction to start in January or February and last no more than 6 months, so the new traffic signal should be up and running by mid to late summer. A 63-year-old man has been charged with sexually abusing three young girls, and the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office is seeking possible additional victims. Michael Wayne Champagne was first arrested in September and charged with rape, unlawful sexual penetration, and two counts of first-degree sodomy, all Class A felonies, as well as two counts of first-degree sex abuse. One additional charge of sex abuse was filed against Champagne last month. All of the charges against him are Measure 11 offenses carrying mandatory minimum sentences if convicted. Champagne has a lengthy criminal record dating back to 1991, involving misdemeanor and felony charges in Marion, Lincoln, Polk, and Clatsop counties. Champagne is currently in custody at the Clackamas County Jail. His bail is set at $750,000. His trial by jury in the first case is currently set to begin on April 14th in Clackamas County Circuit Court. Authorities believe there could be additional victims and are asking anyone with information on children who are associated with Champagne to contact the Sheriff's Office immediately. You can find that information along with a photo of Champagne on our website. Public records suggest Michael Wayne Champagne may have lived on South New Era Road in the Canby area in 2003 and 2004.
Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
Hey, Tyler.
Yeah?
Can you do me a favor? Just real quick, name all the services that you're subscribed to.
Okay. Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. There's like Google stuff, I think. My wife, I think, does a cat thing, and I'm looking into Dollar Shave Club.
It's starting to get a little ridiculous, right? There's even an app to manage all of your subscriptions now. Of course, it comes with its own monthly convenience fee. It can get a little overwhelming. They've even coined a term for it, subscription fatigue.
If you're being hit with subscription fatigue blues, we have a solution for you, at least when it comes to streaming options. Try Easy Video TV from Direct Link. It offers your favorite shows and movies all in one app on the same bill as your internet service.
Direct Link is a local community-based provider that has your back. Record your favorite shows, watch them anywhere, and access all the major local and cable TV networks with an Easy Video subscription.
Why are we still sitting here? How do I sign up? Let's go!
Well, it's easy. Just call DirectLink at 503-266-8111, visit their office at Juniper and 2nd, or go to directlink.coop to switch to Easy Video TV today. Well, it's officially the holiday season here in Canby, and one slightly newer tradition, but one that brings a little bit of a touch of elegance and glamour to our holiday celebration here in town is Allegro Dance Studio's presentation of the Nutcracker. It's in its fourth year, and we're here talking with the director, Amanda Stately. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome onto the Canby Now podcast.
Thank you. So I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you're here every day, probably. We're here at the studio. But you're excited to have this microphone in your face.
Absolutely. You very excited.
Of course. Did I have that right? This is the fourth year?
It is. It is the fourth year for the Nutcracker here in Allegro.
Okay, started 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your background, first of all, with Allegro. I understand it goes way back.
Yeah. I was one of the very first dance members here when it opened. I took classes from Joni way back
there. That's a little bit more than 4 years.
Yeah. I think it's like the 26th or 27th year studio. I know. It's amazing. It's a great thing to have in the community.
Do you ever like look back and kind of reflect and just like, wow, like this, I mean, that your parents like maybe were just looking for something to something fun for you to do or something, and it ended up changing sort of the trajectory of your life.
Definitely. Was something that I loved to dance around, and I don't know that they were prepared for where that would end up bringing me either.
Right.
But it's amazing to see that the studio's changed a huge amount. It started in just one small little room and I mean, tiny. And I think about the space that we were in at the very beginning, and I can't even imagine, trying to teach a combination in that tiny room. And and then it grew and it became a little bit bigger, and then we moved again. And now we have this beautiful facility here. Yeah. We're really lucky to have something like this. And
how many studios do you have now? Five or six?
Five. Yeah. One of them's a little bit larger, so they're able to do performances as well in there. Mm. And like the aerial, like fabric work, and they do some of their musical theater shows, their aerial shows, things like that in there as well. It's really cool.
Yeah. Do you recall how many girls that first class was?
Oh my gosh. I would say
it must have started with just
a
handful.
Tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that under a six maybe.
Okay.
I think in my class. Maybe five or six. And I think that there was only like three or four classes, I think there was four.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now it's what, hundreds?
Yes. We have 200 students involved in the Nutcracker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's just a Nutcracker.
I know. It's amazing. Yeah. Just the ballet part of the school.
Cool. So you got your start right here in Canby.
I did.
You ended up going into dance and
I did.
I classically was trained or
very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Became very serious with it, and trained in Seattle, Houston, and New York City, and then it brought me back here. I danced professionally with Oregon Ballet Theater.
Oh, cool.
And
so in Seattle, Houston, New York City, were those like schools or troops that you were with?
Yeah, schools, training facilities, summer intensive programs, things like that.
Yeah. Did you ever feel like small town girl in a big city? Like any stories about that or sort of fish out of water feelings?
Oh, absolutely. It was very overwhelming. I was the only one that wasn't homeschooled. I'll never forget that.
Really?
Everyone else
is
homeschooled.
You go to public school here?
I did. Yeah. I went to Canby High, and when I was training at Oregon Ballet Theater last year, I was really the only one that was still in public school. Everyone else had either graduated early with their GED or was doing online schooling.
Yeah.
So it was really a little overwhelming. I had to work hard and get, go into classes early to be able to leave early for rehearsals and things like that.
Yeah. Did they give you a little guff, or did you just have to prove yourself, or?
Yeah, you know, I thought it made me more well-rounded. I think that's really important. You have to realize that dance is a passion, and, you know, it's something that we try and really instill in the kids here, too, is you still have to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it is a serious art form, and we want to make sure we train them really well and correctly and the proper way to do it and the right technique and all of that and be professional as we can.
Yeah.
And but you also still have to make it fun.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'm all about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's to be enjoyable. And, you know, if these kids aren't allowed to go to a football game or go to prom, it's not going to be fun for them.
Sure. That's awesome. I bet that that's a big part of what has helped this studio grow over the years. It's got to be.
Oh yeah, I think so too. We're able to, it is amazing. And, you know, I know I'm a part of this right now, so it's easy for me to say, but I do feel like that's something that's amazing with the studio is how we're able to have such a good caliber of teachers and instruction and yet have it a recreational studio still.
Yeah.
And especially in ballet, you really don't see this level of a nutcracker. Just using that as an example of a performance at that level without it being a very strict ballet school. And we're really lucky to have that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, but I understand anyone that's ever seen me dance would know that I'm not not a big dance guy in terms of like quality or talent, but I do like to dance.
Good.
But I understand Allegro has quite the reputation, like, you know, in the region and among people that know those sorts of things, which is, again, is not me, but is that true?
Yeah. I mean, it is true. You know,
even though you're okay with fun, you still
exactly. Yeah, we still train them. What's amazing is we do have a lot of different kinds of classes.
Okay.
So yes, I'm involved in the ballet portion of it, and we have a great ballet program. However, the aerial program and the contemporary program, we have a competitive troupe that goes and competes, and they're amazing. We have the performance company who performs in Disneyland.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, it's really cool that they're. So many different styles of dance that we offer here, and we really, you know, Joni does a really good job of trying to bring in the best instructors from all around. You know, I'm trying to think, there's only a few of us that are from this area. The rest drive in, you know, and they come here because the kids are passionate, and it's a great work environment, and so we're lucky to have that group of teachers.
Cool. And I also hear a lot about Joni Brockman, the founder, kind of her vision being a big part of the success as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I
mean, you remember when she was just getting started.
Well, I think the thing with Joni is she has such a great mix of professionalism as well as, great, you know, business and work ethic. But she's so fun. I mean, the kids love her and they also respect her. And so she's really a great influence around the studio. And, you know, no one matches that. She's got the little 3-year-olds there and they love her.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of them that, you know, they want to be with just her and, you know, that they're like, that's their second mom almost in that sense. And then these older
and
girls.
They don't care. They don't get, she's built this amazing studio or whatnot.
They love her. Yeah. She's just such a fun teacher. You know, she's been there since the beginning and she's still there, you know, stretching with them on the floor, you know?
Yeah.
It's really awesome. Fun.
Well, tell us a little bit about Nutcracker. And I mean, I guess maybe even in general for folks that maybe haven't seen it or don't quite know what it is and maybe what happens here in Canby.
I love the Nutcracker. The Nutcracker to me is so traditional. I got to be honest, the weird thing I would say is that I came from doing so many shows and I've started doing Nutcracker when I was, I don't know, kindergarten, all the way through that people were like, you don't want to do Nutcracker? Everyone sees it as such a traditional ballet and they wanted to do it. And I was like, I don't know. You know, I was a little burnt out from it. And there's a part that as you see these kids growing up and you see them, every year we were doing a different ballet.
Is it true? It's probably like maybe the most mainstream of ballets.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of the most sort of accessible story. I mean, because maybe it has this more of an accessible story.
Yeah.
As opposed to like you really have to understand what's happening dance-wise to appreciate, you know, some ballets.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, part of it is that, you know, the music is so well-known.
Yeah.
You know, people hear Christmas and they hear Nutcracker music. So already, you already know a little bit about it in that sense. It's right up there with Swan Lake, I'd say, and, you know, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, all of those famous ballets. Nutcracker's absolutely there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that's kind of like a coming of age, like you're able to do the Nutcracker. You know, it's something that's not just tradition for a studio, but, it's kind of a proud moment to put it on and be able to have a production like that. And we're really, yeah, it's been really fun. Yeah. I don't even, can't even begin to tell you how cool it is to see even the fourth year. Yeah. We haven't done it that long, but the difference in the kids between the first year and the fourth year, they come and they're excited because they are growing up with the Nutcracker. It's new. And, you know, they're just, these little kids who used to be, you know, Sugar Plum Fairy Dust are now growing up with it. And now they're mice and they're soldiers. And, you know, and they look up and they're like, what am I going to do next year? And that's really fun.
Right.
That's
when they start
super fun.
Sort of reaching for, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you have the Sugar Plum Fairy this year, Alex Monin,
yeah.
I don't know if she's been involved all 4 years, but I saw her last year.
She's been involved
a little lower stage down.
So every year, you know,
she was one of the snowflake creatures. I don't know.
Well, she was a snowflake as well. Yeah, she was, but she was also our Dewdrop last year.
Dewdrop, okay.
Which was also a very large lead role. Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yeah, she's a beautiful dancer. She's worked really hard. We have a few seniors this year, and it's always sad to see them go, and she's one of them. And she is doing the new thing this year. We're doing a pas de deux, which means it's a partner dance between her and a guy. And it's very classical, beautiful music, and it takes a lot of hard work to get to that level.
They were rehearsing right before we got on this.
And so it's really, I'm excited about that this year. It's something new. I always like to change it up a little bit so no one gets bored.
Cool. Well, I want to come back to that, but I'm just so intrigued and I guess respectful of, like, 200 kids, like, logistically, I mean, the quality that you guys put on is really amazing, but I mean, even just in terms of wrangling all of those
totally.
Kids, like, how does that happen?
It's backstage, hands down, it's backstage help. And the first and foremost is Joni's organization.
Yeah,
she's got this all so well organized in that sense. And, you know, it starts with us way back in August. We do auditions and we, you know, find out who's signed up for the studio. And we also then break it into classes and we see, you know, which classes are going to do what roles. And it changes every year based on how many kids we have.
Yeah.
But then backstage, absolutely backstage help is necessity. We have parents who are the most amazing parents you will ever find. They're always backstage changing kids' hair, getting them dressed, checking them in, checking them out, helping them, you know, go to the bathroom in their costume, like, you know, helping them with all that kind of stuff. So it's amazing the parental involvement and help that we have backstage, and we really couldn't do it without the parents, and I mean that very seriously. As far as, like, organization truly backstage, Mother Ginger is really hard. We have to get all these little kids under this big skirt and you're trying to count them out. My goodness. And it takes several people back there naming off names for sure.
Yeah. Well, what I think is cool, obviously, that you even make it happen and that it's not like a huge disaster, but, like, when they come out on stage, it's like every, even down to the tiny, tiny kids, of which my daughter was last year, the little dustlings.
Little fairy dust.
Yeah. The space is kind of carved out for each group, each age group to feel special, to make the most of what they're capable of, you know.
Well, that's so important. I mean, you have to with those kids. That is their moment, and they've been working so hard for that, and you want to be able to showcase that.
Yeah.
And the one thing that's super important to us is to make all the kids realize that even if you are the fairy dust or the Sugar Plum Fairy, you're equally important.
Yeah.
Everyone is a part of telling that story. And I tell the kids a lot that even the kids in the background, you know, you think that you're just running around doing something. You are creating this backdrop. You are creating the story. And if you break character, if you, you know, don't think that you're that important, it influences the entire show.
Yeah.
And I think the kids really listen to that. They realize that every little part is really important.
Yeah.
And they love it. They feel special.
Yeah.
And they are.
Yeah. That's so cool. I mean, the quality, like I've mentioned, is just unbelievable. Like, we saw it last year. I think I saw it like 4 times because I had to.
My
daughter was in it. But
that's good.
But
I'm glad.
I enjoyed it. I mean, at least the first couple times, I really enjoyed it.
Good.
But yeah, the music, the sets, the costumes, obviously the quality of the dancers and how hard they work. If folks listening to this haven't seen it, like, you would be amazed. You feel like you're not.
Oh,
I mean,
I really
not that I really mean anything by this, but it doesn't feel like a small town, you know, you don't feel like you're in Canby. Like,
that is the biggest compliment. And people have said that. And it really means so much to me. Yeah. Like, I feel like...
And nothing against Canby. We love Canby.
Oh, but you know, absolutely. What I mean?
It's just the quality is unbelievable.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, I impartial, but I think it's a great production. I do. I think the caliber of dancers is amazing. And to think that all of them are all students. We don't have, I mean, a lot of Nutcrackers in the area hire in professionals to do their lead roles.
Sure.
And we don't have to do that. Like, we're able to have the kids do this. They're all students. And that's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. And yeah, the costumes are beautiful. They are really well done. Mm-hmm. And each of the sets, you know, we every year, you know, tried to change up a little bit of the sets and stuff like that. But we have the snow that comes down.
Right.
And my favorite part is the cannon.
Yeah.
That amazing cannon that wakes up every dad from the first act.
Yes. But how do you keep it fresh? I mean, so this is fourth year.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about how you kind of changed things up.
Yeah, it's a hard balance for sure.
I mean, there's nothing new about the Nutcracker, right?
Well, we do try and change it up a little bit. Yeah. So the hard thing is, you're right. I mean, it is so traditional. You don't want to change it too much because people really look forward to that part.
Right.
Of it.
Right.
But every year we do change a little bit. We add a little, you know, different costumes. This year there's going to be new costumes.
Okay.
And people have mentioned that in the past. And parents have come up last year, I changed some choreography. And some people would never have noticed that. But other parents are like, oh, I noticed you added that. And that looks neat. And this year we
parent would never notice that.
Yeah, right. And we have the pas de deux this year. So that's a big part of it, having a cavalier there. That changes it, some costume changes, and you know, we do try to keep it fresh that way. The other way is that, you know, the kids, there's different groups. This year we have little kids doing candy canes, and it's fun, you know, to see them do that, as opposed to last year it was high schoolers. You know, so it changes it that way too.
Cool. Well, I am just amazed at how much energy you seem to have, Amanda. Like, where did that come from?
Oh, I don't know.
You're not going to reveal your secret.
I don't know that I'd say I have a ton of energy. I've got three kids at home, and so this is a piece of cake compared to that.
Cool. Yeah. Well, last question. What are you most excited about? You guys are about to open here.
You know, I'm really excited. I am excited to see what the community thinks of the Nutcracker. Every year we've gotten such amazing reviews and support. That's probably what means the most. I think the afterwards people talking like, oh, were you involved in the Nutcracker? Was that you that put it on? And I'm like, yeah, and I'm proud of it. And I love hearing that from the community, especially. You know, it's something that we're lucky to be able to produce for them. But at the same time, we're also really lucky to have a community that accepts it and enjoys it as well.
Yeah.
So I hope everyone gets to go see it and that they like it. And that's what I'm most excited for, is to see all their...
Well, if you do see it and you do like it, let them know, because obviously you just heard.
I know. We love it. It does. That's all it's about, for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out. I mean, obviously you're just here, you know, so you don't have to go home yet, but
exactly. Yeah, this is my vacation right now. Yeah.
But thank you so much. It was a joy to talk to you, and thank you for all that you do for kids in our community.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, we love those kids. Yeah. They're fun.
And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
They can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat. And we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
All right, joining us on the line now is Spencer Lubunsky. He's the general manager of iFly Portland, which is an indoor skydiving experience. Hi, Spencer.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Awesome. Well, I guess my first question is, what demon do you make a deal with to get a job like what you have, and how can I get that?
we made a deal with the god of wind, right?
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's pagan but not demonic. Got it.
Exactly. But yeah, I have to say I have one of the best jobs in the world. Being able to fly people, sharing my passion with everybody from the ages of 3 and up, and get to fly whenever I want too, which is a huge perk.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good perk.
Yeah.
So I only like fairly recently even knew that this type of thing existed. Can you, for maybe some of our listeners that also sort of did a double take when I said indoor skydiving, can you sort of explain what it is and maybe a little overview of how it works?
Yeah, definitely. So what it is that we are recreating the free fall portion of a skydive out of an airplane in an indoor environment and a controlled and safe environment. So pretty much anybody can fly. We're here to teach you. This isn't a ride. We are here to teach you how to fly your body. So the experience, your first time experience, lasts about an hour to about an hour and a half. You will be paired up with an instructor who's going to give you everything that you need to know, the body position, some hand signals, how to start maneuvering in the wind once you find your balance, and a few other things. And then we actually go in and put it to the test. So our wind machine can go up to about 170 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. Most adults will be flying right about 100 miles per hour, give or take, when they're in the belly orientation, so belly to earth, kind of mm-hmm. like laying down on the wind. As soon as you start getting the hang of it, we start giving you more and more freedom, start teaching you more and more stuff, and to the point that you can start learning how to do flips, tricks, fly like how our instructors fly, how Bella flies, how these professionals fly. So we could teach it all to you right here in Portland.
That's awesome. Have you done like the more traditional form of skydiving as well personally?
Yes, I have about 600 skydives, including a world
600
record. Yeah. I've been doing this since I was 18.
That's crazy. Do you think it compares pretty well, the indoor version?
Yes, definitely. So what you learn in the wind tunnel is exactly what it feels like out in free fall. So that's why skydivers from all over the world come to our location and all the other iFly locations to train and practice. One of the other really cool things about vertical wind tunnels is that we can have an endless skydive.
Oh, yeah.
Standard skydiving in the United States is only about 45 seconds long.
Sure.
If you're jumping from 14,000 feet, until you have to pull your parachute, of course.
Right.
And here we can go, you know, minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes straight if we really want to. So that's one of the really cool things beneficial things for training how to skydive and fly.
Right. You don't have to hit the ground and then go back up in a plane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the like craziest places that you've skydived?
I would say the best place I've ever done a skydive was down in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. I lived and worked down there for a little bit before I found iFly. So down in Queenstown, New Zealand, right next to the Remarkable Mountains and over the big lake and everything, it was absolutely amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's hands down probably my favorite.
I bet that's kind of the only thing that you sort of lose. It sounds like you gain quite a bit in terms of going indoors, but you maybe lose a little bit of the visuals that you would get from being able to do it in someplace really beautiful like that.
That is true. You do lose a little bit of visuals. You know, it is inside.
Right.
And most people bring their family or friends to watch. So there's plenty of space for spectators. So you got grandma out there with her iPhone just laughing at you.
Right. Or someone else's grandma or whoever.
We actually do offer virtual reality in our wind tunnel as well.
Oh, cool.
So you can go for a VR skydive over like the Palm of Dubai, the North Shore of Hawaii. We have a couple in the Swiss Alps and everything over these iconic locations. So you can get the physical and the visual sensation of skydiving without actually having to leave an airplane.
Okay, cool. Could you put me in Mordor? Well, you mentioned earlier when we were talking Bella, that's Bella Capra, who I wanted to ask you about as well. She's a local Canby girl that we did a story on a couple weeks back about something completely different that she does, which is also really awesome because she's just an awesome girl.
Yep.
But I found out in the course of that that she is also a competitive junior indoor skydiver, and I guess you've worked with her quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Bella is one of our frequent flyers here. She's flying at least 2 to 3 times a week after school and between soccer practices and everything else that she does on the outside of school. But yeah, she's training hard right now for another debut in the national championships in Florida in January.
So what kind of goes into the training, and what does that process look like? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, to get to that level of like where Bella is.
Yeah, and just maybe kind of what the different training exercises look like. I mean, is it like Rocky where she's in a freezer hitting slabs of beef or what?
we do that as well, but no, really.
Maybe have the beef float out in the tunnel with you or something?
Yeah. really when it comes down to, you know, when you're training and learning how to fly, the biggest probably hurdle or obstacle is the communication with the coach. We do not have any microphones or headsets or anything inside our helmets. Everything is done non-verbally. So finding a coach that you can communicate non-verbally and in the wind ultimately is probably the biggest hurdle. All of our coaches here in Portland are absolutely fantastic. Our most senior one has 8 years in wind tunnels. Our least senior one is 2 years. So we have one of the most experienced teams in the entire United States, and I'm very proud of that. So she found her main coach, David San Pedro, and he has really taken her to the next level.
Cool. Well, we have seen some videos of Bella doing this, and she's pretty amazing. I guess that she finished second in the junior category last year, and like you mentioned, Spencer, she's about to compete again in 2020. Yeah. I believe next month. It's January, right?
Yeah. Yep. Mid-January.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have other flyers that are from the Portland area that compete in that?
Last year, we actually have, the previous 3 years, some of our instructors have been on the U.S. championship team for what's called Dynamic Four-Way.
Wow.
So that's four grown men in this this tiny tube flying at 170 miles per hour, and they have certain lines and maneuvers that they have to do as fast as possible.
Wow.
And so a few of our instructors were on that team, and they were able to secure the championship, and they actually represented the United States as a whole in the world competition last year. This year, I don't believe they are continuing that. So they kind of disbanded, but all of our other local flyers and everything, we definitely encourage all the competitions. Some decide to go, some don't. We also do local competitions. Mm-hmm. So almost everybody in our local area, they all compete locally. Those that do decide to go and take it nationally or internationally, we throw all of our support behind them.
Cool. Well, I kind of zoned out through part of what you're saying, but basically I think you just said Bella's the best. That just kind of sums it up. Bella's the best.
Pretty much. Yep. She is the best.
Awesome. Well, I love what you guys do. Like I said, I didn't even know it was a thing until pretty recently. I've always wanted to do skydiving, but I never have just because I guess opportunity and a little bit of the safety aspect. I've kind of, you know, driving around, sometimes you see like signs for skydiving or whatnot, but at least ones I've seen, it's kind of like Billy Joel's old country skydiving, sure. And it doesn't make me feel like I necessarily want to give it a shot. But I definitely, you know, what you guys do looks really cool and a really safe and fun way to give it a shot. So I'm going to give it a try sometime. I understand there might actually be some specials or some stuff going on around the holidays.
Yeah, definitely. So right now we have quite possibly one of our best deals of the year. It's what we're calling the perfect holiday gift. So what it is basically our introductory package, two flights for two people, so two flights each, four flights total, and two photos total as well, so one for everybody. That one's going to come out to $99.95. It's typically right about the $150 mark, so saving you about $50, it gets two people in. You can buy it now, fly it anytime in the future. They never expire. They can also be flown anywhere around the United States as well. So we have about 36 locations in the United States that they can be used at. So you can even get gifts for your nephews and cousins on the other side of the country.
Cool. That's awesome. Thanks so much, Spencer, for your time and for just telling us about this crazy job that you get to have.
Yeah, definitely. And we always encourage spectators as well. So if you guys ever want to just check it out, just come on in. We have a fantastic staff that will answer all of your questions. I know even just the word skydiving has its own connotations, and I can promise you that those connotations do not equate to what we do here.
Cool. And you can check it out. iFlyWorld.com/Portland is their website. They've got some cool videos and photos and stuff on there and lots of other information. So thanks again, Spencer.
Yeah, thank you, Tyler.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby. It was a moment the two Canby Cougar football players would never forget. They stood on the edge of the field at Dallas High School with their coach, the legendary Irv Garrison. The rest of the team was in the locker room. It was one of those days that was made for football. There was an autumn crispness to the air, and a mist hung over the empty field and bleachers like an expectant blanket. "You know, men," one of the players later recalled, coach saying, "there's something almost sacred about the calm before the storm. Take a moment and breathe it in." They took a moment, maybe a second or two. Then Coach Garrison put a finger to one nostril and blew a huge snot rocket out the other side. Moment's over. See, everyone has a Coach Garrison story. He was known for a demanding, quiet focus, which in practical terms meant absolute silence in the locker rooms before games. While at Swieslaw, he spent only 4 years but helped kickstart a reign of dominance that would span 5 decades. He once led his team to the visiting locker room before a postseason game against the undefeated No. 2 ranked Brookings Bruins. Swieslaw began their traditional pregame ritual, 10 minutes of silence with the lights off. The players were to spend the time gathering their thoughts and focusing on their assignments on the gridiron. The Bruins had a different approach. The Vikings could hear them in the home locker room above their heads, playing loud music, laughing, stomping, and reveling, celebrating like they'd already won the game. So Coach Garrison burst into the room suddenly and flipped the lights on. He started yelling, "You hear that, boys? We don't need to play this game because Brookings thinks they've already won it. They're up there dancing on your grave." But they wouldn't be dancing for long. Breathing fire, Swieslaw jumped to a 42-14 victory in their first postseason game in school history behind a 3-touchdown performance from All-State running back Tui Emery. Coach spent 9 years in Milwaukee, where he similarly impressed upon his players the importance of a quiet stillness and tranquility. Once, a terrified freshman approached him before a game and nervously squeaked, "Coach, is it okay if I pee?" Coach Garrison barked, "Yes, but be quiet about it." Anyway, that's according to legend. A longtime friend and fellow coaching legend Mouse Davis recalled that he cared about two things, football and family. Whether they were that in that order, he didn't say, but no one could motivate young men like Coach Garrison. That Coach Garrison and Coach Davis would be lifelong friends is almost bizarre, a fact that seems to prove the old adage, opposites attract. While Mouse Davis would revolutionize football with his pass-happy run-and-shoot offense he pioneered at Portland State, the man he affectionately called Irvy, with a style that could be more appropriately be called run and run, and then run some more. Camby was a moribund football program when Garrison came here to coach in 1979. The Cougars had gone 0-9 and had scored only a single touchdown the year before and hadn't seen a postseason game since 1950. What, did they even play football in the 1950s? But failure was one of those words that just wasn't in coach's vocabulary. Within a couple of years, he had the Cougars trending upward, then gave them a breath of excitement with their first playoff game in almost three decades. The next year, he told players that they were going to turn that breath of excitement into a hurricane. Hey, we told you the guy could motivate. At Camby, Garrison molded the clay of earnest and impressionable young men into a distinct team culture and play style that was made in his own image. It was a hard-nosed, smash-mouth football. You'd beat us maybe, but you'd always be taking your lumps. I think it was when he came to Camby that Coach finally became who he really was, Mouse Davis said. He had tried a variety of things, run a variety of offenses, but when it was that he came to Camby is when he developed the wing T man. Coach loved the wing T, a run-heavy formation that was as compact and conservative as the man himself, featuring a bruising fullback and two big tight ends. In an article in the Oregonian from that era, it sums things up nicely. In Camby's wing T offense, the Cougars run, 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 and they pass about as often as Reagan and Gorbachev get together for a summit meeting. His quarterbacks averaged only 7 pass attempts a game, less than every 2 each quarter. One former Camby player recalled how Garrison motivated him to become greater than he was. Henry Gonzalez, class of 1984, recalled how he was getting beat up on brutal 2-on-1 drills where he had to fight through a double team and then make the tackle on the running back. He was sleepwalking through it, getting obliterated and just praying for the next water break when he overheard Coach Garrison tell an assistant, "Boy, you can really tell the players who went to football camp and the ones who didn't." Well, see, I hadn't attended football camp, and hearing those words from our head coach triggered something deep inside of me, Gonzalez said. From that moment on, I vowed I would slam my body violently into anyone who stood in my way. I would prove Coach wrong and earn a starting spot. He did, and he also earned a nickname, one that is still sticking with him now almost 4 decades later, Hammer and Hank. Coach Garrison posted a 90-36 record during his 12 years at Camby and twice led the Cougs to the state semifinals. So strong was his influence on the program that the wing T remained the school's standard formation until this past season, almost 30 years after his retirement from coaching. In his younger days, Garrison had been a standout football player, somewhat ironically though, because he was a quarterback, and he was also a track star. In 1958, he took 5th in the nation in the javelin with a throw of 217 feet 5 inches. Mike Doty, one of Garrison's assistants who took the head coaching reins when he retired, recalled him as an old-school blue-collar guy who demanded a lot from his kids. But, he said, he was also a great storyteller and motivational speaker and had a great sense of humor. He was such a character. In his later years at Camby, he took a grandfatherly aura. People loved him. Ken Buckles, who played and coached under him at Milwaukee and later coached against him, said Coach Garrison was like a father to him. "I love them. Oh, I miss them," he said. Under Coach Garrison and his many great assistant coaches, the Cougars were tough, physically and mentally. In his retirement years, Coach enjoyed hunting, fishing, traveling with his wife Joanne, and spending time with his family, and spending time at the old family farm in Nehalem, where he had grown up, helping his father's logging crews, and had always figured on a career as a lumberjack. He said he loved being around people, appreciated a good visit, and enjoyed swapping stories. Coach Garrison died in February 2017. He was 83. The Spirit Bell, which is rung every time the Cougs score a touchdown on their home field, bears his name. We have a couple more profiles for you as we wrap up our series on Camby sports heroes with 2 more recent stories of courage in the face of overwhelming odds and adversity. And that's next time on Camby Then.
I am not a golfer.
I mean, I'm not a good golfer. So when I want to play a few rounds, I head over to Frontier Golf Course. They're a family-owned, family-friendly 9-hole course with beautiful scenery. And they let me rent clubs or bring my own. And they don't judge me for my slices and hacks. Or, you know, my language.
Frontier Golf Course is a great place to meet your buddies and have a drink or bring your kids along. They're located on Holly Street just north of town. If you hit the ferry, you've gone too far.
Also, please don't hit the ferry.
Yeah, please don't. But do ask them about Farley the Goat. They love that. Frontier prides itself on being the best value course you'll find in the area. If you haven't been by in a while, you've got to come check out what the new owners have done. Frontier Golf Course, it's a new frontier.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome! Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
Huge thank you as well to our supporters on Patreon. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we seriously love. For information on how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, a patron of the Canby Now podcast, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.